Lisa Lampanelli here.
Is this like an AA meeting?
It is. Actually, it's closer to my AA meetings than you would even think.
Are you in recovery?
I am not. Well, you're not supposed to say that you are.
What does
it
matter?
Oh, yeah.
The rules.
Then yeah.
Okay, cool.
Well, do you do that or you do all different kinds of stuff?
Well, no, I did Codependence Anonymous, mm-hmm. Al-Anon. Right. Overeaters Anonymous, and I always got to step one in each of them. And
right, yeah.
So I really feel like I've really evolved.
Well, the Al-Anon I never even understood, because that's because you are codependent.
Exactly.
So for me, I would be better off just waiting outside those meetings, picking up women.
Yeah, if you can't get laid after a codependent meeting,
yeah, right.
Then you have got no game at all.
And get your laundry done.
Yeah,
so at the same time.
It's perfect.
And
why, were you going to the Asian meeting?
Yeah,
is that what's going on?
That's what I was doing. But not only get laid, but then have her say, this is all my fault.
I love that.
Yeah.
Good point.
I don't understand a codependent who has trouble getting a man. It seems like the perfect personality.
Well, I think the whole thing is like you just have a man constantly and you don't feel whole without one. You
right.
know? So I had to take a year off from men to just let the healing begin down below. Because you know about those blacks. They'll stretch a bitch out.
Yeah. So you were actually... It wasn't so much a spiritual healing,
right.
But a physical healing.
A conectomy.
A conectomy.
Conectomy is what I think the technical terminology is.
I didn't know that you worked that way medically.
Yes,
so
yes.
You really... And you're very honest in your book.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
The strange thing is that you are the queen of mean. That's your... part of the business, but at the same time, you're one of the nicest people.
I am
on the planet.
I'm like the best.
Right.
I'm only like I'm a sweetheart of a gal.
Right.
Here's my problem with all this Queen of Mean stuff, which I love. I've created this monster that I can't stop talking about the audience or other people or making fun, but then I feel terrible afterwards because with this fucking Twitter,
right?
These cocksuckers all think they're funny, and guess what? They're not.
Right.
So they poke fun because they think that's a way of connecting.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought to myself, if these things hurt my feelings somewhat, maybe I've hurt somebody else. So
yeah.
I made this joke where I adopted a dog. I named him Parker after Sarah Jessica Parker because they're both ugly cute.
Yeah.
Now I thought of this joke and I said, I can't do it anymore because maybe she has hurt feelings. Do you know I can't stop myself? I did 20 shows today and I keep talking about that fucking Sarah Jessica Parker, but I love her. That's why I named my dog after her. So there's something wrong with me, I think.
It's almost once something gets into your mind, you're somewhat obsessive about
can't
it.
Can't shake it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I do agree with you about this, that you can pull it off, but the people who go, oh, I want to be just like her, can't pull it
terrible.
Off.
Terrible. This is the thing. This is why at the roasts, I laugh. Because the jokes are actually written well and funny, like mm-hmm. Jeff Ross, Whitney Cummings, these people. And the people who write, you know, they have the staff writers at Comedy Central write for the celebrities like Snoop and all. And they know how to write. So it's funny stuff and you're laughing because you just appreciate the joke.
Yeah.
But these dopes on this Facebook, I mean, this cunt of a drag queen has to say, oh, you're a drag queen, has to criticize how I look. I'm like, you tuck your penis with duct tape. I don't need duct tape to get dressed. And this bitch is coming at me. So I blocked them. This is what I am. Some days I'm in the mood for you and I'll laugh along. The rest I block you, I'll ban you, I don't give a crap.
And that, see, this is because you peak in, and you are peaking now. Your career is phenomenal. But it's at an age where you can't get off stage anymore.
No,
you are
exactly.
on stage. People feel like you have to be accessible. Oh, be funny in your show, be funny at the radio to promote it.
Right.
Afterwards, then be funny on Twitter.
Oh, and here's one too. Your dopey ass drivers that pick you up start joking with you, then I gotta not be a cunt. Cause like, they're gonna be like, oh, Lisa was a cunt. Cause believe me, I ask them who's a cunt and they tell me.
Yeah, right.
So I figure at some point Donna Summer's gonna get in the car. Why Donna Summer? I have no idea. She's gonna get in the car and say, I hate Lisa Lampanelli, and she's gonna have to agree. So that's why you have to always be so nice. And sometimes you're just tired.
Right.
It's not a wham, wham, I'm tired. But it's just like, sometimes you don't wanna be like engaging.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have never in a limo like went zzz, you know, with the window.
Right.
Can't do it. I don't care. I can't bring myself to be negative like that.
It is true though. When you're leaving the airport, say to a driver, who's the worst person you've ever
love
driven?
It.
They will.
Guess who my guy told me the other day?
Go ahead.
You guys are going to love this. I had a driver for the Tonight Show and I said, how long have you been driving for the Tonight Show? He's like, oh, you know, many, many years. I said, who's the biggest asshole? He goes, in all my time here, there's only been one asshole. You're going to love this. The Situation. I loved it because that loser, mm-hmm. let me tell you, first of all, he made our roast a shambles the way the guy, he ate his own cock on that stage. That was horrible. But, you know, I don't like these reality people. I'll watch the TV shows. I watch everything on Bravo. You know, I'm a gay man for sure. But, oh my God, these Jersey Shores, I can't take it. I can't.
They're, to you, that's the worst of all of
them. I just feel like it's like, you know, what are they famous for?
Yeah.
Banging lots of chicks and not even making it funny. You know, at least write a joke about it or something.
They are legitimately famous. They're just not like, hey, you're on a little show. That's great. Good luck for you. They're famous. They're selling tequila.
They have money. Yes. Snooki has a book out. Snooki wrote a book. Right. I mean, really?
Yeah, it's true.
Really? And Charlie Sheen's doing comedy now. Right. Stupid tour. This asshole, Charlie Sheen, sells out Radio City in 18 minutes. It took me 9 months to sell out Radio City, and I have an act and a brain.
Right.
So I cannot believe that. I'm like, I get a little angry with this.
And Charlie Sheen still hasn't written his act. He has no idea.
None.
He's like, hey, what he's going to do is go up there and just wing it for a while and then take questions. This is Radio City. This place is gigantic.
6,732 people. I know that because my Jew promoter made sure that he counted every freaking ticket. Trust me. Right?
Yes. Yes. I guess technically that's right. I don't know whether we had to specify, but yes, I'm sure it was a Jew promoter. But it does. It is very, very difficult for somebody like you. And I said 10 years ago, I used to see you all the time when you were doing the Radio Chick show. And, mm-hmm. and I thought you were doing great then. You were headlining clubs. Mm-hmm. But the amount of work that I've seen you do in those last 10 years, I don't think the people at home, and the fact that people at home maybe don't even get the difference between that what you've done and what Charlie Sheen has done. One's just this crazy thing that happens or with the situation. But what you've done is slugged it out every single day since then.
I mean, we used to do, when I was doing comedy at clubs around the city, mm-hmm. you do up to like 7 spots a night.
Right.
You know, running around, just trying out new stuff and just having your face seen around the clubs in case there was anybody there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's a lot. So now, like, seriously, I do comedy Friday, Saturday, you know, and then that's it. I'm not one of those needy comics who has to be like, oh my God, if I don't get on stage, I feel no self-esteem. I'd rather be home ignoring my husband because whatever. I'm a celebrity. Hello, leave me alone. You're in the prenup.
Right. So, and yeah, there are plenty of comics who feel like they've got to get on every night. But how do you stay sharp? You've got it
I'm
now.
I'm just so fucking funny, dude. Can I tell you about that statement? I've heard this before and it's true. Every comic has to think in their heart that they're the best comic who's ever lived, or it'd be too hard and they'd quit. I legitimately, in my head, think I could go toe-to-toe with anybody. Like, Henny Youngman, Rickles, suck my dick. I will take you down. I will take you down to Chinatown. I just feel that you have to have that weird confidence about comedy, but then you're totally insecure about everything else.
Sure.
Right.
But I would pay gigantic money to see Rickles suck your dick.
Yes.
I mean, that would be the greatest show
ever. In my
ever.
Defense, I have a much thicker one than he does. So it works out nice.
Was it Rickles for you when you were younger? Was that the guy? No, not at all?
Never. You're going to die. Never watched stand-up comedy till I was 7 years in the business, because I was like, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Guess what we watched when I was a kid? The Dean Martin roast, of course.
Isn't that
so
crazy?
Me and my parents would sit around watching. I go, oh, doesn't look fun. Like, they're all friends.
Yeah.
They don't aren't friends. They hate each other as much as I hate Jeff Ross.
Right.
I actually like him. He's a very sensitive, good guy. But yeah, I would just watch those. And I guess that's what I thought comedy was like. So I gravitate to this.
Those things were amazing, the old Dean Martin roast. And I think, I don't know, I do think that the roast that you're involved in is a way more competitive situation, because I have the feeling, I mean, you killed on the last one with Trump. I thought that, and you've done very well in all of them, but I have the feeling that if you don't, the network is going to go.
No, I think with me and Jeff and Whitney Cummings now, and even this new kid, Anthony Jeselnik, who did it, I don't think there's a way to not kill. We are all so driven to work so hard for a whole month or more that there's no choice but to kill, especially for me, because that's what I do. Like, I'm an insult comic in real life. Mm-hmm. They're monologists, but I'm like, wow, I got no excuse to suck. So, dude, up to the last minute, I mean, I'm just stressing. But that's why I now engineer it to go first.
Yeah.
Because I'm not doing that last spot anymore. It's too hard. You got to cross out the jokes. I used to have 30 pages. Everybody else had 5 pages. I had 30 goddamn pages. And I'd sit there like an idiot. I don't drink, so I'd be having like heart attacks. Everybody's drunk and having fun and pulling up their Courtney Love's cunt, whatever. And you see me. Watch any of the roasts when I go last. I'm sitting there and you see me crossing stuff out and rewriting and stuff. You don't even recognize the script later. So first spot is the one for me.
Yeah, and of course, Trump, his hair is going to be the first guy who gets to it, hysterical, by the end of the night.
Unless
like,
it's super
up.
Clever. Unless that's the thing. Whitney went up about maybe fifth or sixth, and she said he looked like Justin Bieber on fire. Mm-hmm. So it was funny enough that the joke speaks for itself. You don't even think of it as a hair joke. You just think, oh, that was funny.
Right.
You know, so it has to be on its own. Like the Pam Anderson stretched out vag jokes.
Mm-hmm.
How can that not be funny?
Right.
You know, there's enough fodder in her twat to make everyone laugh for years to come.
But it's great to hear that you're stressing before that you're not.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because I think that people would like to think you just wander into and you've got it, but it's important for you.
Well, this is a bone I have to pick with Pat Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote a book. Okay, here's how insincere I am. I'm really nice to my friends and family, but I'm a fake with comics because you have to like them and act like you're all friends. So I had my book signing at Caroline's. Pat Cooper comes, which I thought was real gentlemanly and cool because he's an old guard kind of guy.
Yeah.
So I signed the book to my hero, Pat Cooper. His book comes out. I get it from my father for Christmas. And my father goes, did you read this book? And I'm like, no. And he goes, he shits all over you in this book. And I'm like, why? Because he goes, what kind of girl says I'm your hero and then you don't mention me in the book? And I'm like, I wrote it. I didn't mean it.
Right.
But I wrote it down. So Pat Cooper then proceeds to say what phonies we are as roasters, me and Jeff and all us, because we are prepared. And we have paper and jokes where he goes and wings it. Well, that's why you're not on fucking TV, okay? Because it's almost like it's an art form, roasting all to itself. And yes, Pat Cooper kills, and no lie, in the Friars roasts here when we do the 1,000 people and nobody sees it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you kill in private. I'll kill in public, stupid. You know, I just hate that when people got to come after you for doing your job.
But I do think that he likes you very much. Cause,
but isn't that weird?
He actually told me the story when I had him on here.
Cunt.
He went, and he looked, honestly, I thought that you guys were closer because he seemed hurt about it.
Yo, that's the thing too about being hurt. I'm going to tell you a story. I told Jimmy Big Balls, that's my husband. I told him I wouldn't say this. A couple days ago, he got a big sack. It can't be helped. Okay, so I'm sitting there on the Twitter and I had 2 hours sleep, I think, Monday night after the Tonight Show because I had to do Dr. Drew Loveline and then something early in the morning. I can look at Twitter, Facebook till I'm blue in the face when I'm in a good mood and have had enough sleep. But when you're worn down, your defenses are down and you start getting your feelings hurt. So I'm reading stuff from fans and I'm like, you know, it's hurting my feelings a little bit. I'm like, oh, these cunts, they just think they're funny. I'll let it go. Freaking Jeff Ross puts a freaking insult about me. Of course, I'm sure he meant it in a loving way.
Right.
But I said, I got to handle this right now because I cannot let me resent him.
Yeah.
Because I know he's a sensitive guy and I know if he thinks I'm hurt, he's going to really be upset. He's going to really feel sad, you know, and that's good. We should be sensitive. Like you said, Pat is hurt.
Yeah.
I email him this nice long email about, you know, it's bad enough. I have to go online and see these a-hole fans say stuff about me. I'd really rather you didn't make fun of me. There's a whole world of big celebrities we could all make fun of. Kirstie Alley, Carney Wilson. I mean,
come on.
I mean, please. So, you know, I got the most sincere letter back from him saying, I would never in a million years want to hurt your feelings, blah, blah, blah. So I think all this bluster of us, Pat Cooper, Ross, all of us, is all covering up that we're just big pussies inside.
Well, isn't that the funniest thing, too? Because one of the things that comes out about the kind of comedy you're doing, people always saying, well, this is real, keeping it real, saying what's happening. But the real truth is almost every comic like that is as sensitive as you are.
I think so. Yeah. I think the harsher you want to sage probably is the softer you are in real life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, I've heard that about Rickles and Newhart. Oh. They say Newhart is the one with the real dark sense of humor in real life. And Rickles will, you know, cry when he's watching a TV commercial.
God. I cry so much. It's hysterical. Like,
damn.
I cry over stupid shit. I'm on the plane the other night, and I can't even believe I'm saying I watched this movie. I watched this movie on the little thing called Letters to Juliet about about this Amanda, whatever her name is, from Mamma Mia, reads the letter, tracked down the two lost lovers 50 years ago, boom. I am crying like a bitch. I mean, literally, like, and I can't stop either because I'm like, oh my God, this is really affecting me because will I ever have that kind of love even though I just got married? Oh my God, what's going on? So I'm just like, wow, because it's a movie, it's a fantasy. Yeah. It's not really like that. But I go, wow, I'm a queer. Yeah. Like, I'm really like a real fag.
Well, you know, there's also a weird thing, and you can check this out. We cry more and laugh more on airplanes. Now, watch that now, because they'll put on a movie and people get sensitive. But one time I'm on an airplane coming back from L.A., and they had the King of Queens on, and everybody was laughing so hard, and me and a stranger high-fived. Now, then after I did, I go, this can't be this funny. I think we're not getting enough oxygen. So watch on an airplane now to see if you're not more sensitive.
Yeah, that might be. And also your defenses are worn down, too. Yeah. You know, and you just feel like, oh, God, I just traveled so long.
But then,
P.S., you're not allowed to complain. Because, like today, I Twittered a picture of my dog, Sarah Jessica Parker, and I Twittered, all I said was something like, why do I have to get up at 4 a.m. to do this shit? And he gets to sleep because it's cute. It's a picture of him sleeping, right? Mm. Do you know I have to get some Twitters from douchebags going, oh, well, I guess it's better than you having to go out and dig ditches and have a real job. Right. It's like, you cocksucker. I just want an excuse to put a picture of my dog. That's all I wanted. I didn't want it. I'm not complaining. So you're not allowed to complain.
You can't complain. Yeah.
Never complain. That's what it is.
But see, I think a lot of people, they think, oh, she's got this act, so I'll have this act.
Oh my God.
And then she'll like me. And then she'll like me.
Totally. It's like they'll just because I get approval from people by calling them names doesn't mean you can't, because you don't have the magic and the spark and the fire and the beauty that is Lisa Lampanelli.
Right.
I am special. Okay? No, seriously, I am. And they aren't.
Right.
You know, I'm sorry, but not everyone is a comedic genius like you and myself.
Well,
I included you, but I didn't mean it, but I had to.
And then later you can Twitter the meanest thing in the world, and I'll just be crying at home.
Never.
Waiting for King of Queens to get on to finally make
I'll
me feel better
again.
About myself. But, you know, Jim Norton is a friend of mine, and I think he's a genius.
Love him.
And I think everyone who wants to be him is an idiot. And I can't, you know, at a certain point, like, I'll get emails from people, and I'm like, I know it's because you're a fan of Jimmy's, but AIDS isn't funny the way you do it. It's not.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
There's something funny about him because he's a good person than doing these awful
jokes.
Totally, because
he's a sensitive guy. He's, you know, I'm telling you, the harsher they are. I bet Louis C.K. is a nice guy. I don't know him, but I bet he has that little.
Absolutely.
Because he has that harsh comedy. Attell. Yeah. Oh, my God. Dave Attell is so nice. And I don't hang out with comics.
You try to stay away from other
people. Well, because, you know, I don't have to hang around with them because I just, you know, I have my opening acts.
Right.
Get this. I used to get opening acts who were my friends who weren't that great, but they'd carry my shit.
Right.
And they'd help me and they'd hand out my little flyers and they'd do everything for me. But then you give them stage time and $1,000. I mean, that's not bad.
Yeah.
And they're starting, so they're all happy that they get to play to big places. Well, this is the problem with women and homos. They start thinking they're big shots and funny. Guess what? Nobody saw your name and fucking came to this show.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to get rid of all of them. I got two straight guys, one on the East Coast, one on the West Coast, and they both know each other exists. So that one fucks up, they know the other one can be slid right in.
Yeah.
And the weird thing was, they're very competitive. They joke around about each other. And they both met at my wedding for the first time. And I thought there'd be a nice big fight so I could get in the paper. They didn't even fight. I didn't get in the paper.
You getting married, was that tough to your material, though?
I mean, no, it made it worse, because I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I just feel like invincible.
Because
you got like a big protective guy. Like Jimmy used to do security for like big people. Like he just did Johnny Depp. You know, I mean, it's like he's reliable, you know, and he's tough and he's strong. So I just feel like I can say whatever I want now.
Right.
What's really going to happen to me?
But a lot of your material was about being a single person and failing at things. And
Do
we really want a happy?
I'm not happy.
Oh, you're not happy.
Oh, my God, no.
Oh, good. Thank God.
No, I mean, I'm not even lying, because somebody said to me the other day, on the happiness level, I hate them. They're so fucking queer. On the happiness level, what are you? And, like, I think last year, I mean, maybe 10 years ago, before I started doing theaters, I was probably at, a 9.
Because
I was like, oh, this is so much fun. There's no pressure. You don't have to sell tickets. But you love what you do. And ever since that, I've gone down to about a 5. And adding Jimmy, maybe a 5.2. Right. I mean, he's a great guy, but I don't really revel in the blissful relationship like other people do because I'm a comic. Mm-hmm. And we kind of work on it. I work on myself a lot, but mm-hmm. I still stay a little bit miserable. It's weird.
There are some people who think therapy could ruin the comeback. No.
Guess this. Yeah. I'm freaking successful. I'm a major celebrity. let me tell you something. I've gone through the shrink for how many years? At least 10, 12 on and off. I have a life coach. This bitch soaks me for $500 a pop, so I don't know if she's doing any good, but whatever. She's a tax write-off. And I get a lot of help. Yeah. I went to the codependency rehab, the fat rehab, the this, the that. So it hasn't made me less funny.
Yeah.
Maybe I just take more chances because I'm more secure in it.
Does it work for you at all? I mean, do you then find out more things that you're insecure about and then take them to the stage?
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Like, I really started venting a lot about this whole, like, you're not funny. Like, you're not a comedian. And the whole, like, you know, how I can joke about it, but you can't. And it's starting to really, like, come into funny bits and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I like taking notes, even when my shrinks and her are when she and I are talking, I think on the way home, I'm like, oh, that would be really good. Because this is, it's a little deeper,
yeah.
But it's still, it could be so funny.
Well, what's interesting is now we're at a point where the rest of the world has to be entertaining. And yeah. If you're watching a news show, if someone's Secretary of State, doesn't matter, they have to come out, get a laugh, do a couple things.
Right.
And you're like, we've turned the whole world into panel. Mm. Everybody has to have something entertaining now. And it's, I don't know. I think we're diluting.
No, really totally. Do. And with all the channels that are out and stuff.
Yeah.
But what about, did you ever see that movie? Oh my God. That Jamie Kennedy made, Heckler.
Yeah. I saw some of it.
And it's a lot of it is about heckling, like you would think, but also he considered heckling people who blog and say mm-hmm. you should die. People who Twitter, or at the time it was Facebook, and or people who just write nasty things, and reviewers who are not Roger Ebert. They're not qualified to be reviewers because they studied film. They're just some dick with a computer
right.
who's a nerd who thinks he has an opinion, but your opinion's wrong. I'm sorry. There are some opinions that are wrong, you know? And he takes them, he really dissects what personality type those people are and dissects it. And it's like, wow, we have critics around us every second.
Yeah.
Like, you can't escape. I don't read blogs. Oh my God. I even do an innocent little newspaper article. Like, New York Magazine once asked me to do a diary. Like, they did this a week in the life of food of celebrities. So where you ate out, and everybody's naming classy restaurants. Are you fucking really? Right. So I said, I'm going to be real. And I'm going to like talk about where I really eat. So me and Jimmy go to Gray's Papaya. We go over to the cart. We hear that always has a line.
That's a great cart.
Fun, right?
Yeah.
And to write about that instead, I read the article. It was cute. And then I just by accident skimmed down, and all these snobby New Yorkers
the
are
comments.
Like, you know, asking her to review food. And it's a joke. And like, you just get your feelings hurt even with that.
Yeah.
So I said, hey, I don't read anything. Facebook and Twitter now, I'm committed because I call them on it. I'll go fan or asshole. If they answer back both, they're allowed to stay. If they say fan, dude, I'm only kidding, I love you, they can stay. If they say I'm an asshole and you suck, I block.
Boom.
I can't. Howard, smartest guy in the world. He goes, I do Twitter to connect, but what do? And the guy said, block. So whenever somebody fucks with you, you just block. You know, it's their loss.
Yeah. And it's even beyond show business, too. I mean, at the same thing, go to any story. This is a true story. I read this thing. A woman's kid drowned. Picture of her thing. At the comment section, people started to talk about her weight and whether or not you would have sex with her.
Oh my God.
And I'm
just got to chill.
This is the we have gotten to this point where, again, anything that happens is supposed to be a joke. The tsunami happens, people start to tweet. 99% mm-hmm. of them that are attempting some kind of pressure-free humor, they don't know what they're doing. They don't have the skills that you have.
But then I'm like, well, am I wrong for making jokes sometimes too? But then I can't stop. Like, I had a Liz Taylor joke yesterday. It was mm-hmm. really mild, but it is like, you know, 2 hours after.
Yeah.
Time. Well, I had a little Twitter thing mm-hmm. where, you know, I used to just post my jokes on Twitter, but now I'm connecting more, but I still occasionally do the jokes. So I put Zsa Zsa Gabor is selling her home. She needs to cut down now that her shoe collection is cut in half because she had her free leg cut off, which for a comic is the greatest thing that could ever happen to you. So, of course, TMZ in a way, you're like happy they grabbed it and said too soon and put a little thing, a poll on their site, because you go, ooh, TMZ, I got their attention. So right. That's more fame. But then you're like kind of hurt that TMZ, because I'm kind of team with them. I hosted for that guy,
yeah.
That he dick with me. And people are going, it's too soon. It's horrible. That poor old lady. So I'm like, I could either back down, which I can't, or else mm-hmm. You'll back down every day. Or I can put another one up. So I was like, okay, Zsa's selling her home. It's 28,000 feet, which is 27,099 more than she has. So and everybody's like, yeah, that's funny. So I tell the story of my ex. I'm truthfully pissed off that I can't just say what I want.
Right.
But then the occasional dark hour, you'll go, oh, man, I made that autistic joke at the Trump thing. Those poor kids with the autistic shit.
Yeah,
you know?
But there has to be a way of letting off pressure instead of what I think that you, that's where a person like yourself, Rickles, people who've done it mm-hmm. well, will make us laugh at those kind of things that we're kind of fearful and we don't talk about.
Well, truthfully, I've had more than one person who comes up to me because I, you know, do retard jokes and stuff, and mm-hmm. Frankly, I have a soft spot for cripples and retards. I really do. I know that sounds stupid, but if I like cry if I see a retard. I saw one in Burger King yesterday I couldn't eat. I was like, and you know, not because he disgusted me, but because I have a soft spot and right. I get really emotional. So get this though, because there was a movie once and it showed a woman volunteering for the Special Olympics and she started crying in front of the kids because she was moved and they said, you have to leave. Because you have to just treat them normally. So I'm mm-hmm. like, could never do that. So I'll send a check, whatever. So I do those autism jokes, and I've had more than one occasion somebody goes, thank you for including us.
Right.
Because, you know, my kid has that, and it makes me laugh. And including us is a form of saying you're not scared. Like exclusion is the worst form of prejudice, because if you don't talk about us, we feel ignored. So I'm like, I guess I got to go with my gut. And there's a little reinforcement from these people saying it's okay.
Yeah. And also, it's such a thin line. And the fact that you can walk it, or some of the other people that we've talked about, that makes it brilliant. I do think that that's helpful. But then the clumsy people who come behind you, mm-hmm. and what are we supposed to do? Make up laws because some people don't know how to do things well.
I always get asked every interview from an idiot. So like, not like this where you're informed and mm-hmm. you're a smart guy. They'll be like, do you ever draw a line? What's your line? What's the line that comedy should right. have? And it's like, but there's not any. And the only line is if you can't make it funny.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
I can't make the Japan jokes funny yet. Maybe I will. I don't know. September 11th, there were guys who got up on September 13th, like the Nick DiPaolos and Colin Quinn, who were so good mm-hmm. that they could do a routine and really have some meaning. I couldn't do it, you know, but I would never say I can't make fun of September 11th. I just can't really make it funny yet. So that's the line.
And again, I'm sure in refugee camps, people are laughing. They find things that become funny. The hypocrisy of the entire event of what it's like to try to move money and water.
Right.
And you need those type of things. You need to find those places.
Well, this is why this shocked me. And it really got me. So I was crying so bad. I didn't even tell him. I had George Takei, when I was taping my audiobook for my non-bestseller, mm-hmm. Chocolate Leaf, I thought it would be really funny, because remember Artie Lang had Bob Levy read one of his chapters yeah. on tape, and it was really funny because Bob can't read well. So I said, why don't I have somebody with a really distinctive voice read a chapter to give the audiobook extra value? So I thought of like Dice, I thought of Gene Simmons, you know, a bunch of people. So George Takei said he'd do it. And he has that really mm-hmm. gay Japanese voice, and it's really distinctive and funny. And him reading stories like, oh, come in, Tyrone. I would like, and it was really funny. I go to HarperCollins to do a little promo video about, hey, George is on my thing. I'm so excited. All I said was, I swear, I did not know this was bad. It was total ignorance. I go, yeah, it's great. Oh, George, I love that he's gay. Because let me tell you something. That is a double minority, a Jap and a fag and whatever. And I had made fun of him at the roast before,
right.
William Shatner. So he laughed along with it, blah, blah, blah. We put the video up. HarperCollins puts it up. I get a call from, no, Jackie, my assistant, gets an email from George's boyfriend slash husband, whatever Brad is, and furious, going, Lisa's this, Lisa's that. How dare she? How dare she? And blah, blah, blah. And Jackie's like, she's this little frail, like, she's like, oh my God, yeah. She's like, what did you say? And I go, I don't know. He laughed at the jokes, like, at the roast. I don't know. He heard them before or whatever. So I say, let me call this Brad. First of all, The day Jimmy fights a battle for me, I'll fucking kill him. Because, you know, handle your own shit, by the way. Mm-hmm. So I called George's husband, and I'm like, dude, what's going on? And he starts lighting into me, and you know the gays, they can really be mean. And I said, and I just said, what is the problem? And he goes, you never say the N-word. And I go, yeah, I do. I go, what did I say specifically? He goes, you said the word Jap. And I go, what's wrong with that? Because, you know, you say chink and spick and whatever. Mm-hmm. And he goes, no, that is enormously bad feelings. George was in an internment camp and this and that. And that was the word those men used to blah, blah, blah. Where am I operating on the assumption with the audience that you see the intention behind it, that I could call you whatever I want. Right. And people call me a cunt. Huh?
Yeah.
And they know I'm joking. But he really took that bad. And I go, well, I called him a fag too. And he goes, that's okay. and I am in the car just crying and crying because I go, I hurt George Takei's feelings right. after he did this for scale for me, you know, which means really cheap. So I was crying and crying. I don't know what to do. And Brad then, you see, that's where the fags are good too. You turn it on them a little, you start crying, and then they feel bad for you.
Right.
So I'm like, oh my God, I never do anything. And he's like, I'm sorry, Lisa. I really didn't. He goes, just George is very sensitive. And I'm like, okay. So, and I mean, he's gay. Yeah. He is gayer than Daniel Tosh's butt plug. So, so I then called George. I said, let me take the bull by the horns or really call and apologize because he'll sense from the heart.
Yeah.
And I did apologize. But I was like, how did they? This is my whole thing, being misunderstood. How did you not get that wasn't a bad intention, George?
Yeah.
How didn't you get it? You know, and it's like weird because I was telling the story on stage for a while and I was just too upset about it to tell it. And now I do my jokes about George in my new special, but they're fun, loving jokes. But I go, wow, how couldn't he sense that I don't dislike him?
I mean, you've done it before, like with Jeffrey Ross. You even explained that you saw a joke.
Did he mean that in writing? I think writing is different because that's why I ask my Twitter guys, fan or asshole, because you can't tell they didn't.
Yeah.
If they don't put a smiley face or an LOL, then I'm like, well, I guess I don't know.
Right.
You know? So I just, yeah, maybe that's a double standard I have, that I'm like, well, I get my feelings hurt constantly, but I expect everybody else to be, oh, we know she's kidding.
I think that the complication of like your whole personality of this really sensitive person that's ready to throw elbows at any moment, mm-hmm. I think that's the show. I don't understand where Hollywood is. Not been here with a TV show right now.
I always think it's not meant to be because I've had deals with Fox.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that was really, it didn't heartbreak me at the time because I just met Jimmy. And you know, when you're like first in love,
right.
you don't let anything else bother you. So I think that's why the timing was the HBO one. Like I got a deal for a series with them. And it was going to be a very dark, like Sopranos type of show. Jim Carrey was the producer.
Yeah.
And even Howard was like, wow, when Jim Carrey can't get a show on there, there's a problem with TV.
Sure.
You know, and it was about how dark comics' lives really are, you know? It was almost like Louis C.K., but not focused on one person. So you have the deals, and then you go, well, I mean, you don't get all bitter and queer about it because you make a good living anyway, but you go, maybe that's, like, not what I'm supposed to do.
Right.
Maybe what I'm supposed to do is, you know, more of the live, and I like the live anyway.
Yeah,
that's all I ever wanted to do. I never got into this for any other reason.
And you don't have to discuss it with club owners or theater owners. Your act is your act.
Oh, my God.
If they want you, they want you.
Hey.
Nothing else.
Don't ever change. I won't ever leave out a word.
Mm-hmm.
I got banned from some club in some theater in, I think it's San Antonio or Austin, because of a word or something. But then I found out so did Ron White. So I didn't take it personally.
Right.
I go, oh, they're just sensitive about racial stuff because Texas is known for being racist. So I get it. They don't want to have that. That's cool.
But it's one thing with the success level you have now to be able to say that, but you did it early on too. You were just,
oh my God.
There's places you wouldn't work.
Get this. In New York, it's like, okay, I developed outside the city. So when I came to New York, I look like, oh wow, who is this? Holy shit. So I was 7 years I worked and then I move into the city, right? And I'm doing comedy. And you feel very chosen when you get to work at The Cellar, Stand Up New York, and Comic Strip. Back in the day, those were like the big ones that you were all honored to do spots and get accepted by. So the first one I got into was Stand Up New York. And so I was like, wow, I'm in a real New York club. So I said, you know, I do my regular stuff and I called some woman a chink, you know, but whatever. And I'm like, and she complained to the club. And they said, you can't say chink anymore. I said, but I said spick too. And they go, you could say that. Yeah. It's that whole like double, because they didn't complain. And I go, well, too bad. I go, seriously? I go, that's okay then. I really don't have to work here if you don't want. And I said, I leave it up to you. And because I wasn't all overly confident, but I kind of knew I'm eventually good enough to get into these other places. Mm-hmm. I can't change it or I'm a dick, you know?
Right.
So the guy was like, rethought it, and they were like, okay, all right, whatever. You know?
She's not going to be here every night.
I have a feeling that like they need me more than I need them at right. that point, you know?
But two things. Right away, it's so interesting that you would wait until you got good before you came into the city. It always mm-hmm. amazes me. Guys are like, I'm going to go up and do my first show. And you're like, crazy? Not here.
Nope.
Wait until you're done.
And I waited till I got on TV for the first time to just be seen in L.A. Because L.A. is even more important. So it's like, you know, I waited till the Chevy Chase roast. And then I was like, oh, I got to move there for a couple of years and just make people
the Chevy Chase roast, things exploded for you suddenly.
Right.
I mean, you were,
that got me a manager, agents mm-hmm. who I still work with, which I think is a record because, you know, comics change managers and agents. P.S. I've never had a fight with my manager or agent. They've never done anything I don't like. Isn't that
That's
fantastic?
Amazing. I've never even heard
it's
of
it. It's just meant
before.
To be, you know?
The Chevy Chase thing, supposedly this is, you know, somewhat legendary
yeah.
because Chevy, if you believe the Tom Shales book, you know, was destroyed
right.
after that roast. Did that all feel that way to you
oh
that
my
night?
Oh, my God, it was awful. But yeah. see, I was so focused because that was my first TV thing and the Friars were producing the roast at the time with mm-hmm. Comedy Central. And I go, this is my shot. They fought to get me on that, those Friars. They're the best. So they're like, you got to get behind her. And Comedy Central's like, we don't know who she is. And so they were like, no, this is one we have to have on. I go, this is my shot for sure. So Chevy's sitting there with those sunglasses on, which is a dick move. I mean, that's the worst. Even in real life, when people have those glasses, I'm like, I'll fucking smack them off your face. I hate that. I won't let my husband wear glasses. I just don't want to freaking not see your eyes. It's foolish. So he's sitting there literally looking around. Like I'll be over, whoever's doing the jokes is over here, and he's like, and writing stuff down on paper like we should be threatened that he's gonna make his big comeback because we know what a genius he is. Fall again. So so I resented that, but I said, look, this is my shot. I'm going up third to last. I gotta kill, right? And mm-hmm. thank God those Friars, most of the audience was Friars, and they were all behind me. And when the minute Paul Schaefer said, the next roaster is a Friar who, and they knew it was me, I won already. Mm-hmm. And then it was really a good show and they moved me up in the broadcast to third instead of end. But that was that Chevy Chase. I have no love for him. I think that's terrible. And I'm glad it was the worst night of his life because maybe he changed.
So even at the point you're just tagging it that night, everything's changing for you. And the fact that Chevy's career started to go in the opposite direction to you. Good.
Good.
Yeah.
No.
Got it coming.
Get karma's a bitch, motherfucker.
Yeah.
Because right now I get karma, mm-hmm. the bad things I've done. Like, seriously, poor Jimmy, he's like, when are the jokes about the black guys going to stop at the roast? And I'm like, and Carolla said, this was so funny. He goes, you are grandfathered into Black Cock University for the rest of your life. Those jokes, you will always have, they'll always have that on you. Mm-hmm. So it's karma's a bitch. But I said to Jimmy, hey, be lucky they're doing those black jokes because now they're not coming after you.
Right.
You know, so, you know, be happy you're safe.
He feels so good now.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Poor Jimmy. Oh, my God.
But that's so funny. I didn't even think that you would take that home. I thought the two of you would go, hey, this is the roast. But even that kind of stuff stays
imagine,
a little.
Well, yeah. Not for me because yeah. they're funny jokes, but for, you know, it's a guy. He's a guy.
Right.
And he's really funny, too. He's the only guy I ever dated who makes me laugh. He's legitimately funny. And we're on the radio a lot together when I feel really tired. He'll come mm-hmm. and like pick up the slack a little because he's really funny. Like one time Howard asked us if we have a mirror over the bed and Jimmy goes, we got one over the dining room table. You know, so he like really is
right.
funny. So him, you know, he hears those jokes and he's just like, ah, come on.
Yeah.
You know, let's let it go already, you know.
But it was a long drive home after that where you're just like real quiet. And
oh, no.
How many black cocks were there?
Well, no, I'll tell you what's funny. Well, I'll tell you what's funny. Every day on the radio, once when we started doing the radio together, like really cool radio guys who were friends would go, mm-hmm. you know, Jimmy, you know, they feel they could take a risk with him because he's big. So you don't yeah. want to really fuck with him. So they go, Jimmy, seriously, like, do you ever get kind of mad about that thing about Lisa with the black guys? He goes, what are you talking about? This is the first time hearing this? God damn it, you know? So he'd turn it, so then we didn't even have to talk about it. But honestly, he doesn't read. He has, what's that one? ADD.
Okay.
It's an excuse to not read. So he has.
I can't take the little ones underneath. They hurt too much.
Yeah, I swear to God.
They came out of nowhere.
Yeah. He absolutely is lazy and won't read. He hasn't read a book since college, and he only went to college for 1 year at a community college, so you can guess what book that was. You know, really tough stuff. So he wouldn't read my book, but he goes, I'm going to wait till it comes out on audiobook. So he went to the gym, and he's listening to the thing. So he's listening to a chapter a day. And like the first two chapters are that, you know, black stuff. And I only really dated. I had a black boyfriend for 3 years. And then I had like maybe six black guys I dated. But I was like, I think those jokes are funny.
Right.
You know, blow more black guys in Hurricane Katrina is a funny joke. Right. So I'll say it, you know. So it's like six, seven guys. But still, he said, and he goes, he's funny. He's after like the seventh chapter, he got into the food addiction and the codependency and all that stuff. And he goes, honey, lately I'm feeling really like tense and like I can't, I'm like anxious. What's going on? I go, what's been going on with you? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you're listening to that fucking book? That's going to make you upset. I don't want to hear about his exes. As far as I'm concerned, they don't exist. I'm like that. You know, I don't care. I'll just know you as a virgin now and we'll go on and we have our own life. But he was listening to it. It really bugged him. I said, please just stop reading the book. Mm. I mean, when I went to record it, we were at that stage where you take your boyfriend or husband everywhere. We're at the freaking recording studio. I started to realize I have to read this chapter like I'm all hot for these black guys in front of him. I go up to my assistant. I text her because you can't talk in front of him. I texted, tell the girl we have to tape 3 through 12 before we do 1 and 2, and I got to get rid of Jimmy. So we start. She goes, Lisa, she comes in, the producer. She's like, yeah, I'd really prefer we start at the end of the book. I think that'd be more appropriate. And I'm like, really? You're kidding? And she's like, yeah, that would be a good idea. The book comes out, and he goes, you really think I bought that? He goes, come on. He goes, I'm stupid, but I'm not that stupid. So, but you know, I don't want to have to do that in front of him.
And I don't remember anyone else doing that material before you, even that concept of, you know, I guess black comics had done it about, you know, white women, but I never heard a white comic do it about black guys. So that was this huge leap ahead of this area that you owned.
Well, in fact, like Jim Gaffigan once said to me, he goes, you're really brave. He goes, you're really brave to talk about that. And I'm like, well, I had this boyfriend. He was cool with me talking.
Right.
And I was like, okay.
But it's just great to own anything to yourself and so many people attacking whatever material is out there.
So what you're saying is I should be happy about my honorary degree from BCU. I am now.
And that was a doctorate. It was a doctorate you picked up. No, I think it's actually the book I'm a huge fan of because you laid so many things out here. And I think just sitting here now, you're very honest being yourself. I mean, the things that you talk about, they're not easy for people, but at the same time, I think we can all relate.
Right. I think that's why Howard likes me too, because like he'll ask me a question, I'll just answer it. Like this whole like, oh, I can't talk about that or acting coy. It's like, you know what? What's the worst? You know, in the program, they're like, you're only as sick as your secrets.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? Whatever. I really don't think there's anything anyone could ask me that I wouldn't answer. And the only thing in my prenup, you know, it's all the money stuff, of course.
Right.
But there's this confidentiality thing. And they go, is there, if you guys split up, is there something you don't want him talking about? And of course, finances only because that's, you don't want somebody saying she has this much money or whatever. But I said, my parents, you can never go and say my parents are cocksuckers. And I can't say that about yours because that really hurts your feelings.
Yeah.
So it's the only thing.
And you even brought up in the book that you kept a home in Connecticut. You wanted to be near your parents.
Well, by the way, there's going to be a whole nother book written after they're dead because I didn't want to put in it like then my mother being a rageaholic. I allude to it, you know?
Right.
But I'm like, book two is going to be really interesting.
So we now understand where the codependency comes
from.
Totally.
Got to
make the folks happy.
Too. Yep. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Like, yeah, you never want to hurt their feelings, really. Like now even I feel like saying to my mother, like, this is my mom. She's really funny. And great storyteller. I like how she entertains me even about like stupid stuff I don't care about. The story's still good. This is me. Yeah, Mom. So, I'm going to be on The Tonight Show for the first time. Oh, my God. I'm so happy. And, oh, that's good. That's great. Oh, my God. I'm going to be on with so-and-so. And she's like, oh, and you know what? Guess what Blaze did? My nephew. Guess what Blaze did? And I'm like, oh my God, how do we just switch from me to Blaze? And I love Blaze. Blaze is my first nephew. I got 8 of them, and I love him the most. I'll go on record saying it. You always have a favorite. But I'm like, I know better than even to say, Mom, that just hurt my feelings. It's like, you know, they're 80. Right. They're 80. And my freaking life coach is always like, you should really talk about it with them. It's like, you know what? Talk to your fucking parents, because mine aren't going to hear it well.
Yeah.
So let me just let them be who they are.
But there is still this thing. You do the Tonight Show. You want to make sure that they've seen it.
Oh, my God. My mother is the only one after every Tonight. I did my 10th one, which I couldn't believe I even got on it once.
Right.
So my mom calls me every time I do it. You know, first it was like my mother, my sister, and my brother would all call. But now it's like, okay, really? Enough needy attention whore. My mom and dad always call. Like this week, my mother's like, were you happy with it? And I'm like, oh, I really like this one. The audience for the first two jokes was like, ooh, but then I yelled at him. And my mother's like, oh, I like that. And you looked great. Like they just know exactly what to say.
Yeah.
You know, because really, how much more exciting could their life be than to have me in it? Like you really, I mean, really, you get to brag a lot, you know, even though I'm a shame to my family in some ways, like, you know, I've been on the Tonight Show 10 times. I'm a regular on the Stern Show. It's not so bad.
And you did bring up, even though you've done it so many times, and Jay obviously is a fan, he lets you be yourself. But that LA audience, I don't know whether it's because they were tourists, you did have to pull them
in. I did. The first three jokes. Oh, I did. I said, really? Blah, 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 blah. And that's what Jimmy said. And Andy, my stylist and everybody, my manager, they go, just you being you and like going at them. Are you freaking kidding me? Really? And just like telling them off. That's like so just genuine. Yeah. And that wakes them up.
And that's still the instead of going, too, right?
That's why I suck cock on a Conan show.
Yeah.
Because first of all, he left me out there high and dry. I don't give a shit what anybody says because he's such a nervous Nelly. Like, Jay's not nervous. Jay acts that nervous. Oh, I'm going to get fired today. He doesn't give a shit. He always says to me in the background, oh, by the way, I know Howard hates Jay, but let me tell you something. Howard is a genius. Jay is no genius, but let me tell you, after he's the only talk show host on TV who'll come backstage and say, have a great show, do whatever you want, have fun. I love Kimmel, I love Lopez, Chelsea, all of them, but they're all in their dressing room preparing. Jay makes the effort to at least come in. So that's like the one good thing about him.
Yeah.
You know? But so, yeah, it's just like, you know, he lets me be who I am.
So what happened on Conan that...
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. So Conan just, of course, he didn't come in and say hi because they never do. But like, he's just a nervous Nelly. Mm-hmm. Like when Jay comes in, he goes, look, I'm going to act like I'm kind of nervous, but you know, I'll bleep you. I don't care. I mean, let's do a thing about how we're not supposed to get bleeped, but you bleep something. Okay. And I'm like, okay, cool. We team on it. Conan, every fucking joke I said, and they were so mild compared to the stuff I did this week or ever on Jay. And he was like, oh, well, in that stupid, smug Harvard fucking bullshit way. I hate that shit. Oh, my God, you wrote for The Simpsons. I went to a graduate program at Harvard. I went to Syracuse University, and I did a program at Columbia. I'm no fucking idiot. But I don't have to act smart. I create a character that's pretty ignorant, like an Archie Bunker or Larry the Cable Guy. This Conan. God forbid you'd forget a fucking second that he went to fucking Harvard by his little attitude. So he left me high and dry. So I'm like tanking. And the jokes were really freaking mild too. They were like, oh yeah, I call him Jimmy Big Balls. And they're like, and this all this stuff that's approved. And he's like, oh why? What does it look like? And I go, oh, it looks like that thing a hobo ties on a stick and puts over his shoulder. So, you know, and so it's like not even a dirty. It's like a prop. It's not even saying, oh, they hang there. And it was really mild stuff. And he was so nervous that I was like, it had no choice but to go downhill. And I didn't yell at the audience. That's exactly what I should have yelled at him.
Right.
I'm more in the moment. I should have gone, hey, you redheaded cocksucker, bleep this, laugh it up, or I ain't coming back. In fact, I want a t-shirt that said, I've been on the Tonight Show 9 times, 10 if you count Conan, but I don't. I mean, come on.
Well, good luck getting back. Book back on that
that's
one,
the thing. I told my publicist now, I said, don't call that. That was miserable. Yeah. And want to hear the worst story about that? Do you have time?
Yeah, I got plenty of time for this.
Horrible. Okay, so my two opening acts that I fired, these girls, they started thinking they were funny, started being late. I don't tolerate lateness. I hate it. I really hate it. I'm always an hour early. So we had really bad parting of the ways when I fired them. So one, my name in someone's phone, in one of their friend's phone, must have been right next to theirs. So I get a text intended for my ex opening act that I got by mistake that said, watch Lampanelli tank on Conan tonight. So at the time, it's like literally 20 minutes or, you know, an hour after I tape it, and like tears spring to my eyes. And I'm like, oh, wow. I noticed how hard it was. Now everybody else did too. And I said, oh my God. So I'm about to cry, but I'm at dinner. Never go out to dinner after a taping because you might want to cry. So I'm out to dinner with like my manager and agents, and I could be myself in front of them because I know them. But then other writers were there. I was like, oh, this sucks. So I fake it through dinner, and I go back and I go, how should I handle this? And I had liked this girl previously, and I text her. I said, oh, this wasn't intended for me. You must have wanted to send this to Laura. And she was so embarrassed. She comes back. She goes, oh my God, I didn't mean to hurt your feelings, but you have to admit, you know, they always stick with it. You have to admit, you and Jay have a much better chemistry than Conan and you. And I said, that's not what you said. I said, I'd never done anything to you. And that was really hurtful. And I think you should be ashamed. Take care. I always end it like this. Take care. I wish you nothing but the best. I always end dates like that or anything so they can't talk about you because you're a cunt. I wish you nothing but the best. Punchline is, on my last freaking two Lenos ago, she's like, now that was more like it. And I'm like, oh, great comedy God. Let me please you. But, you know, isn't that terrible? Never send that text till you're sure it's going to the right person. It hurts their feelings.
That's great. Lisa Lampanelli, take care, and I wish you nothing.
You're awesome. Thank you.
Yes. Come on, Lisa Lampanelli.
Ron Bennington, Fez Watley, Ron and Fez.